Welcome to our video interview series with Profiles in Leadership, where we get pearls of wisdom from those who lead. We have a great guest today, Lynn Steffes. Thank you, Lynn, for being here today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Lynn Steffes, PTDPT, is president and consultant of Steffes & Associates, a rehabilitation consulting service. She provides consulting services to rehab providers nationwide. She has enabled countless providers to achieve optimal success in the delivery of high-quality, cost-effective care to their patients and clients by offering assistance with marketing and program development, customer service initiatives and patient alumni programs, training and staff development in the referral and payer relations process, and optimal reimbursement and documentation strategies. Dr. Steffes is a 1981 graduate of Northwestern University and completed her transitional DPT in December of 2010. She served as a network administrator for a group of 50-plus private practice clinics where her primary responsibilities include marketing, payer and provider relations, and contract management. In addition, Dr. Steffes is active in her profession on the nominating committee for the private practice section of APTA and the Wisconsin chapter of APTA, serving as the chapter's reimbursement specialist. So Lynn, thanks for being here today.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I'm just intrigued about, tell me about, you know, well, first of all, we're Northwestern alums.
Yes, both of us. Yes, very so good. Yeah,
I'm very proud about that. Yep, that was
Wildcats.
A year before you.
Yeah.
But so since you came out of Northwestern with your physical therapy degree, what was your first position that you took, and how did you get from there to where you are today?
You know, it's funny, when I was at Northwestern, I specifically was not all that interested in administration and business. Very interested clinically, very interested in neural rehab, and in particular pediatrics. So right out of school, took a job in a private practice that did contract services. Started off in a school system being a contract therapist, and I loved it. I loved working with kids, loved being a part of a team. Within about 2 years, the practice actually secured a contract at a large rehab facility that had children and adults with disabilities. And much to my surprise, the owner of the company contacted me and said, "I want you to be the director." And I said, "Really?" Honestly, I was not.
It's a good opportunity.
Yeah. And I think I was excited and loved everything I was doing, loved all the planning and the strategy, just love working with teams of people. Went in and took the job. I was pretty darn green. I think I was 24 years old. And I have to say, she saw something in me that I hadn't seen in myself.
Sign of a good leader is knowing where the future leaders are. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I just kind of pushed me into one thing after another, and I wound up developing a number of service lines in the company, and within about 6 years was a vice president in a company that had quite a history. Mm-hmm. And what I loved more than anything was developing people, hiring and developing people. And working on new initiatives and programs. So that was kind of my beginning as a leader.
Okay, so you go from there. You got a taste of managing people and leading in a company. So you decided to leave and do something different, do your own thing.
Well, I wish it were that strategic. Okay. I have to say that the entrepreneurial bug bit me while I was within the company after I had started several initiatives. Mm-hmm. And I started kind of working on different initiatives outside of the company at the same time as I was working. And I realized that there's a conflict between being an employee, and even though I was in a leadership role, and being an entrepreneur, that I was kind of dipping my toes in. So at that point in time, I actually interviewed for a job, and the person I interviewed with, I knew, said, "You know, I could contract with you as a PT, but I could also contract with you as a consultant. You have a lot of good experience and a lot of energy." And I thought that sounded like fun.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that. It's 20 years ago, actually. Wow. Saturday.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. So now you're in the consulting world, and so you don't have a company behind you. You're solo. You're on your own.
I know. And it's been, how does that... Well, it's just been a blast. I have to admit, number one, I love our profession. I love the therapy world, the energy, the passion, the commitment, the intelligence of the people I have an opportunity to work with. I love problem solving, which is kind of a PT skill anyway. Yeah. And I love the variety. I work with everything from a tiny clinic where it's a guy and his mom and she does the billing when she feels like it, up to Mayo Clinic. And so I really enjoy learning, sharing lessons learned, trying to lead people through change, mm-hmm. and just constantly doing different things.
So looking at smaller private practices especially, what do you think their needs are? What do you notice in when you come in and assess their practice that they need to really focus on from a leadership perspective?
Well, I think number one, a lot of them have led by being role models. They're hardworking, they're passionate, they're smart, they figure things out, but they don't actively manage and lead with a strategy a lot of times. So I feel like they need guidance on even setting aside time to be leaders. Yeah. I find as much as I teach customer service and marketing to patients and to the community and to referral sources, I feel like a lot of those folks don't know that their first customers are actually their employees. I'm sure that's seen that too.
Absolutely.
And so sometimes giving them permission to not just lead by treating and being good role models, but instead actually allocating time and energy and thinking that their greatest asset are their people.
It kind of goes back to that thing where they're kind of that achiever mentality where they set the goals and they really go after it and they're really good at that. But then there's a bigger vision where you have to not only, you know, achieve things, but you have to lead in ways other than just by example.
It's so true, and so many of them are effective when they're relatively small, just leading by example, but when they start growing, which most great practices will grow, either intentionally or unintentionally, then they have to take a step back and start growing their people, and that requires a different skill set. So I feel like they need, first, permission, they need awareness, and then they need to redirect some of their energy and attention into taking a step back and looking at the strategy and then figuring out how their team can help them get there. And not just telling them, but teaching them and coaching them and letting them stumble a bit and also finding opportunities to recognize their team's contributions. And all those things I think are
such an important thing you just said is, you know, I feel like a lot of directors, they just expect their PTs to work just as hard as they do and put the nose to the grindstone, but then they don't appreciate enough, you know, like, you know, the little things like, oh, you were awesome today with that patient, or I really appreciated how you got through your schedule today when we were so busy. Just little things like that can make a huge difference, but it's lost on them sometimes because they're so focused on what they're doing.
And I think some are so busy that they don't realize that feedback loop is key to really getting sustained change behavior. There's something I teach a lot when I work with practices, and I call it CAF, C-A-F. It's pretty simple. But what it is continuous, authentic feedback. And it's really catching people at the moment, recognizing what they're doing, whether they, you know, rearranged or took a late lunch to fit in a patient, they helped an assistant or someone else move along, they contributed in a team meeting, whatever they did, I think that leader who starts recognizing and valuing that starts to see it's their people stand up a little straighter and contribute more, and that's so important.
So important.
Yeah.
So let's go from the small private practice. Now you're in the Mayo Clinic. I mean, huge reputation over the top. How is that different?
Well, I will say, you know, PTs are PTs wherever you go. There's a lot of good people with great passion and interest in what they're doing. It's a little different when you're working in a larger system and there's a lot of layers and a lot of rules and you're kind of far away from the original strategy. I think that PTs in general are good problem solvers. They're people who are passionate and interested in moving forward and getting better. So a lot of times I work with those systems. I'm working with the rehab team on something. Mm-hmm. And similar strategies, perhaps a little more multiple steps involved in getting changes. I'm so used to working with a practice. Private practices can be very agile. Larger systems are more challenging, the agility, the number of people that you have to approve things with, and also the number of departments involved. And in some ways, it's a huge asset because you have a lot of resources, but it also feels a little like it's harder to turn the ship.
So. And what's been your experience over this 20 years is physical therapy being appreciated more for the value it contributes in those bigger organizations, in your opinion, when you're dealing with other teams? Or is that still just an uphill battle sometimes? Because we all know, you know, sometimes we don't feel they see the value in what we do.
Yeah, that's a great question. Before I went to PT school, in high school I was a physical therapy aide and we were in the basement. Yeah. And I think that was traditionally where the physical therapy department was early on. Some of it was because of the whirlpools, et cetera, but some of it was really, it was kind of strategic that you were in the basement. I don't see that anymore. I see an increase in how those departments are valued in most of the systems. I see leaders rising up through the ranks of PT, and a lot of those departments led by rehab staff, where in the past they weren't. I definitely see with the bundled joints, with some of the quality initiatives, that there's increase in value on how PT makes other services better. Right. You know, a person who's sick gets them out of the hospital quicker. A person who's had surgery contributes to the results of the surgery. So I definitely think we've made progress.
Okay, and some of the other interviews that I've done, we've talked a little bit about how it appears, or it seems that some people feel that we don't have a lot of PTs in those leadership roles outside of the rehab department in these bigger hospital systems. And the question is why? And then the second question is, if we were in more of those administrative roles, would we have more veneer with the team at the more executive level?
I would agree with that. I still see most of the rehab staff managing rehab staff, although there are specific individuals I've worked with over the years that have managed service lines, mm-hmm. orthopedics, sports medicine service lines, oncology service lines. Those folks have to have a broader mentality. Some of it, and I hate to say this, I think is our own tendency to be a little siloed ourselves, to see PT as it's either PT or something else, and that somehow we need to be always first or you know, solo, and we really need to have a broader vision on how we fit in the healthcare system, whether we're in a private practice or a hospital. I feel like if we had that vision, we would have even more opportunities.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we've, you know, for whatever reason you can say, I mean, I have my opinions, but I think we definitely tried to let people know who we were, maybe at the expense of being a little siloed so that we could have our identity seen. But in a big system like Mayo, I think there's a lot more opportunity to work in a team of many healthcare providers. Right. It's much harder in private practice. Sure. So what do you tell your private practices to do and to work as part of that team?
You know, honestly, if I could take that a further step back, when I was a network administrator, we had over 50 clinics around the Midwest, and a lot of them were physical therapy only. Some were physical, occupational, and speech therapy. Mm-hmm. But one of the most important things we ever did was we assembled a advisory board of others. Great. So insurance professionals, physicians, equipment vendors, a banker who looked at financial. And those individuals helped us get a more integrated view of what we were doing as a private practice. I will say I've worked with practices who I feel are stumbling in the community or who really want to take a stronghold and grow. And I've often asked them, who are their friends? Who is their network of folks? And some of those folks have attorneys, bankers, physician friends, retail friends. And I've said, how about having those folks to dinner and talking about your vision in the community and seeing what their input is? And honestly, chamber activities, BNI or business networking groups, trying to get outside of ourselves. As a marketing consultant, the one thing I always do is I always study marketing outside our our silo. So I study dental marketing. I study chiro marketing. Yeah. I study industry marketing. I feel like it helps us have a bigger vision.
Absolutely, because we all drink our own Kool-Aid a little bit too much, and it's like, gosh.
I love that. That's perfect.
That's so true. Yeah, so it's just really interesting. Now, as you, as a consultant and a coach, how do most people hire you? Are they looking to grow their practice, which I would consider to be more of a consulting role?
Right.
Or are they looking to improve their leadership skills and whatever, which would be more of a coaching skill? Is it the same? Is it different? How do you look at it?
That's a good question. I guess I feel like most people hire me to do a project.
Okay.
And I wind up being a business coach too.
Yeah.
Because I
you kind of come in the back door on that.
So they
don't say, help me become a better leader. But as you're helping them build their practice or advise building their practice, then you're going to also help with their leadership.
And I try really hard to follow CAF myself, continuous authentic feedback. So I listen for where I hear their leadership skills coming through. And I try to help them identify those. I say, I notice that you do a great job with doing this aspect. However, there's one area that I think you could, if you invested more, a little bit of time and energy and thoughtful approach, that you could bring your team along and it would really help grow the practice. And so often they're so receptive. I've definitely been hired to do business and life coaching, hired for a lot of people going through transitions. From private practice, either retiring or selling, or someone who's looking at getting into practice. But that's more of a minority that starts that way.
Right.
It more starts as a project. And then as I'm working with them, I see their strengths, and I also see areas where maybe I could insert a little bit of energy and give them some more juice in the
leadership.
And so
most of the
time,
are you working with just the owner-director? Or are you working with some of the team as well?
I would say that a lot of people hire me with that intent, and it's rare that I don't convince them that to bring other team members along. I really feel like they want the answers, but they don't realize that the answers are always better when they include other people.
and some of the most recent research is showing that, you know, a lot of CEOs have coaches.
Yes.
But it's when you start to work with the team and you help the CEO become a better facilitator or leader of the team, as opposed to just the CEO is the only one that's hearing the hearing the strategies, so to speak.
And so I think that probably early in my career, I worked a lot with the CEOs, and I've found over the years, it's the exception when I only work with them. It's more often early on I'm working with them, and then pretty quickly I'm helping them identify individuals, even sometimes doing FaceTime interviews. I do a lot of virtual consulting with their staff and their team, and kind of saying, you know, this person seems really interested in this. They seem to have good interpersonal skills, they're articulate.
Yeah.
This person seems to have a little background in this area. Let's bring them along. And it's funny because a lot of times those leaders and managers really feel the weight of the world. They feel like somehow they're in it alone. And when you help them identify other folks to be on their core team or their key leadership team, they come along pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's liberating. But it's also, it's the only way you can get there is if you've gained that trust. Because I'm sure that they have a little bit of that imposter syndrome where I can't let my people know I don't know this or that I'm not sure. So it takes a lot of trust to get there, but I would agree with you. I think it transforms it when you have more people involved. And how liberating is that to know that you can take a little pressure off your shoulders and have your team help you?
And the other thing is that when they start seeing that individuals on their team are excited about contributing, other than just, you know, their traditional kind of their schedule, contributing on projects, ideas, growth strategies, it's actually energizes the leader in a funny way. They don't feel like they're pushing a rope anymore.
Yeah.
They actually are part of, they gain momentum. The whole practice gains momentum. And that's really fun to see. A lot of practices I go in, or even facilities, and I have an initial project to do with them. And some of them, there's one practice I do some training for. I've been working with them for 6 years. And I started with just like a visit and a very concise 90-day project. And here I am 6 years later, and I'm amazed at all they're doing. I'm so impressed with them. I'm very gratified that I get to see their transformation. And I learned a lot from them as well.
Yeah.
And I will say, I know this just from working with you early on. You know, you had a large company, and I had even a small opportunity to work with your organization. And I think when you admit as a consultant or coach to that individual that you don't know everything, that you're going to look things up or work on things with them, it gives them permission to feel like that's okay too.
Yeah.
And I think the more you know, the more you know you don't know. And there's something about that. I often say to my folks, you know, if I'm the smartest person I talk to all day, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And I want them to feel that way too. I want them to look at their team and find those individuals that have, you know, the pearls, like you said early on.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of pearls out there.
Yeah.
And they're not all, you know, the big ones.
Yeah.
They're often small, and they all make a difference.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
So don't get mad at this comment, but you and I have been around a while.
We have.
Okay.
We have.
So
I'm not mad.
We've seen a lot of change, and mostly for the good. I mean, I think mm-hmm. our profession has definitely been on the uptrend as far as doing things better than we used to. But what has to change in the near future to get to where we want to be? You know, we all want to be that profession that people see the value like we see the value. So how do we get there? What needs to change in our approach?
I think we talk a lot about change, and we talk about leading healthcare in a number of ways. Number one, and this is such a passion of mine, you know, lifestyle medicine and the fact that exercise and activity mitigates almost every major chronic health condition. You know, there are 10 chronic health conditions that cost the United States economy the most amount of money and have the greatest impact on individuals as they get older, affecting mm-hmm. not necessarily quantity of life as much as quality of life. 9 out of the 10 are mitigated by exercise and activity.
Yeah.
And we kind of own that area, but we are still so stuck in the per procedure, per, you know, diagnosis, per episode. We don't see ourselves. We have to start having a bigger vision. A lot of people have it. They can articulate it, but I'm not sure they
take it to the masses, so
yeah.
to speak. Yeah. So, and you had a personal experience. I mean, your dear mother, you know, had some real struggles with cognitive stuff, and you got so passionate about it that you created, a niche that, you know, it was really good for not just PTs to
right.
perform new services, but for the patients receiving it. So it does come back to what you said, it's that exercise thing. So
yeah.
do you feel like that message is being heard more? Or is it just?
I think it's out there. I definitely see more PTs interested in lifestyle medicine. I actually am taking courses through the lifestyle medicine program at Harvard at this time, some virtual courses. I see more programs popping up around the country that include a PT, but unfortunately not all of them do.
Yeah.
And I think that we have, you know, we have so many different opportunities. What we need to do, though, is kind of get out of the grind of delivering procedures and
yeah.
treating a body part and really see ourselves holistically. And I think there's a chunk of PTs that already do.
Right.
And we just have to bring everybody along.
So do you think if the reimbursement drives us more towards, you know, episodic care and eventually case rates and things like that, that'll free us up to do more of that, get away from the fee-for-service?
I hate to say it, but I do. As scary as the change is, and of course it's frightening to everyone to imagine that financial transition, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of what we do in healthcare and in business in general is driven by dollars and policies. I think we're going to have more and more opportunities in the future if we get away from some of the fee-for-service things, because I think individuals are going to look at us as problem solvers. And in healthcare, we're a unique profession. We can not only, we diagnose,
mm-hmm.
we find underlying causes, we put our hands on and treat people, we educate people, we train or instruct people on how to prevent things in the future, and we even can modify environments in a way that enables individuals that have long-standing
yeah.
problems. I feel like we have, you know, I feel like we're just beginning, and the opportunities are endless.
They really are. And we're still, if you consider physical therapy to be more in the mainstream of medicine, we're still the professionals that spend the most time with the patients. We, you know, PTs develop relationships with their patients. And there's a lot of the health providers that can't say that anymore.
No, we have, one of the gifts of being a physical therapist, and I always try to remind PTs of this, is we have time with our patients. Right. We have time, and it's repeated in the number of visits over a period of time. We also put our hands on our patients. And like it or not, when you interact at that level, people share information with you and you develop a trust and a relationship in a way that other providers really don't have the opportunity. I mean, it's a gift that we have. And I really believe that's why we belong in a variety of areas. You know, I personally got involved in brain health. My mom and my dad had Alzheimer's. Both of them passed from it. I, you know, did a deep dive into the literature, hired a team of people to look at the evidence, and really built out a lifestyle medicine program built a lot on exercise. And I have providers in 11 states. I've done retreats for executives on brain health. So everyone thinks brain health is all about when you get old and you forget, but it's not. You and I can benefit from it.
Absolutely.
You know, college kids can. And so we've only just, you know, cracked the door. We have a whirlwind of opportunities ahead of us, but we've got to figure out who our partners are. And I think we have a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think traditional medicine, as you said, we're still traditional medicine. I think fitness and wellness, I think complementary and alternative medicine, we fit in there a lot.
And how do you feel about, you know, sometimes we latch on to things that excite us and we think is in our wheelhouse, and then we want to say, this is ours.
Yeah.
And that doesn't fly anymore, right?
I really think that that's a destructive strategy.
I
really think, you know, number one, my thought is, in healthcare, in the last 100 years, we've seen our lifespan increase by about 40 years.
Yeah.
We've seen the quality lifespan increase only about 20. So in my mind, it should be all hands on deck.
Right.
That's what I tell people. I always say, all hands on deck. Let's get together and figure out who all the partners are. They could be tech companies that have virtual reminder systems, tracking systems, you know, whether it's a bracelet you wear or something in your smartphone.
Right.
It could be, you know, schools. It could be a whole variety of providers. And that's the thing that I don't think that we always get. And sometimes in private practice, we have to work harder to reach out to those folks, but we should do it.
Have you heard of this this PT out in the Bay Area by the name of Kelly Starrett, who he's done a lot of creative things. But one of the things he did was a stand-up kids. And so he went into the school districts in his area, and he convinced the school district to buy stand-up desks for kids. And it's just, it's unbelievable when you read the research behind it, that the behavior problems go away, the kids are more, you know, because as we know, as we're active, our brains, it's what you're talking about on the other end of life.
Well,
and so it just totally makes sense. And it's just what a novel idea that makes a huge difference.
Well, and I think I love that idea that we can go into the community and just insert our expertise, not necessarily just our hands, but our expertise to make a difference. And I think that that's really powerful. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Anything where we can go into a system and say, what about this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if we start seeing as, I think we can lead teams, but I think we can also be idea leaders.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think we have a great education behind us. We have a lot of passion, but I just think the opportunity.
And there's so much more opportunity because, as you've, I'm sure, seen in hospital systems, and I have too, that it's not being done really well in a lot of areas. So I do think PTs have this natural ability to be great leaders in a bigger system like that if they go for those opportunities and aren't afraid to kind of step outside, as we talked earlier about our little niche.
And I work with one hospital system where I've worked with the PT since he was a new grad on projects, and he's now in a leadership role, leads a service line, developed an oncology program where the physical therapist is the case manager in the oncology program that manages like the health and wellness of the patient through their course of care and afterwards. Such a different approach, and he has a real vision for doing that. And it's interesting, I was just talking to him today. He's a wonderful guy, Jeb Huseman. in the Green Bay area. And he was talking about doing the same thing with spine. And I just thought it was fun that he had done it with oncology before spine.
Yeah,
I pointed that out to him. I said, isn't it interesting that you innovated in oncology first, and now you're going to take that innovation home where everybody is kind of more comfortable in spine.
Yeah, exactly.
But we belong in a lot of places. I think in mental health. I think there's tremendous opportunities for us going forward. And I also do think that the new professionals, I have the opportunity to work with 5 universities and teach. And the new professionals, they do have a broader vision. And some of the programs have done a nice job of integrating some pro bono services with nurse practitioners, PAs, OTs, social workers, psychologists. And they're starting to kind of come out of those programs with a little different vision, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. So 20 years of experience consulting.
Yes.
What's the one thing, if you can generalize this much, what's the one thing that the most important thing that private practice PTs need to do to be successful?
I think step away from just being a clinician, but don't step away from those clinical skills.
Yeah.
I think the way we have been prepared as PTs inherently makes us good leaders, managers, marketers, problem solvers, advocates. We have got to take those same skills that we apply to our patients and step away and apply them to our businesses.
Yeah.
And to the vision that where we fit in the community, where we fit with our team, where we fit in the healthcare system. To me, that is amazing when someone really gets, when they tell me, oh, I can't market. And I say to them, you market every day, every time you talk to a patient, or I can't negotiate. You negotiate every day. And when they actually kind of say back to me, they hear it and say, I just realized I really do need, I do know how to do these things.
Yeah, I hear it all the time too. Like you'll say to students, like, talk about leadership. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, I don't want to be a leader. I just want to treat patients. And I'm like, there's no more perfect example of leadership than working one-on-one with a patient. So if you're a good PT, you're already a pretty good leader.
That is just absolutely so true. I think that's often, as a physical therapist, I practiced for 16 years, hands-on with kids mostly and adults with neurological problems. I love being a PT. I love being a clinician. And sometimes I run into my colleagues who remember me more as a PT than a consultant. And they'll say, don't you miss it? Don't you miss treating patients? Don't you feel bad? And I say, you know, I really don't. I could be a PT again if anyone would take me. It's been a while. But the fact of the matter is, I feel like I treat more patients by treating practices and facilities that serve patients. And I always tell them I use the same skill set. In fact, the process I use is called differential diagnosis for your business.
Yeah.
I go through the same process. I apply those PT skills. And I think if private practice owners felt like they weren't giving something up by managing and leading, but they pulled those same skills into leadership, they would be phenomenal.
And again, you fall into the system, because it's like, if I pull back from that patient care, then I automatically think, okay, I'm not generating revenue for my practice. So you get stuck in that rut too, is when is it okay to do that and realize that, you know, maybe no one's going to be quite as productive as I was. And so that's a step too.
That's definitely a struggle. And you have to kind of show them the math that if you grow people and you focus on, for example,
the key, grow people.
Right.
You know, so you can only get there if you grow people to help you get there.
Right. Otherwise, you are setting your own limits.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally leadership.
Yeah.
So, Lynn, we usually end these interviews with asking the question, give us a pearl of wisdom from a leader. So what's your pearl?
My pearl is that you bring as much value as you can nurture and facilitate from the people that you work with. And your value is multiplied every time you bring someone along and you grow someone. And you see that only when you really look. You look for their what strengths they bring. You look for their wisdom. You learn from everyone. And I mean everyone. I mean your billing clerk. I mean the person who cleans your, you know, treatment areas, your therapist. And if you feel, if you always value the people you work with in that way, and you're always looking to learn and looking to figure out what they do well and what they add, then you can't help but not only grow yourself, but your team. And I genuinely see the people who are really successful are people who speak highly of their team and know the individuals on their team.
You are right on. Yes. Remember, that's a great pearl. It's so, yes. So well done.
It's really true. And it's, you know, from my heart, sometimes it's very quick for me to see that someone has really good leadership skills by the way they talk about their people.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, thank you. This has really been fun.
It's been
great. And I want to thank VGM Advantage for providing this opportunity for us to be here today and talk. And you and I have known each other for many, many years. So it's been a real pleasure. And thanks for agreeing to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's a great opportunity. Anytime we can share information.
Absolutely. So, thank you.